Holy Spirit, you're welcome here. Come flood this place and fill the atmosphere. Your glory, Lord, is what our hearts long for, to be overcome by your presence, Lord. I'm too slow to do this, so what we did corporately, we asked for that, and God did it. God did it. So I just want to thank God for that. I just want to give glory to him for that. In a very real way, as I was looking around the room while Ryan was praying and hands extended, prayers being prayed, people's suffering being pleaded for, it made me realize that it was a picture of precisely what our text has to do with today. We're going to see Paul name all of these friends and these cherished co-laborers in the gospel, and those that he's strived with and he's strained with and he's worked hard with. And I don't know, it was just such a beautiful picture of that. I don't want to get ahead of myself, but I'm thankful that we got the opportunity to do that. Okay, well, good morning. The last time we moved, which was just last summer, I told Tabor, Tabor's my wife, I said, okay, in this move, we're going to hire movers because I don't want to ask anyone to have to help us. Does anyone like being asked to help move someone? I know, so I probably was really, my motivation's really, really off in that. So we did, we hired movers, and, they came to the house that we sold, and it did not take me very long to realize that the number they quoted me was going to go out the window very quickly. It took a lot longer to get the house loaded up. We ran into things we didn't expect we would, and here's the deal. You sign like an estimate, and there's this really fine print at the bottom of that estimate that says, like, unless it takes longer, basically. And you're paying these guys by the hour, so I'm you know, looking at my clock like time is money. Oh my gosh, we just got this house loaded up. We've still got to go to storage and get that loaded up, then head to the new house and start that process, and I'm sure we're going to run into things there. I am panicking. I am not very happy about the dollar signs are just like they're just adding up in my mind. We pull up to the new house, and three friends with their older boys meet us there. I don't even think I asked them. Like, I didn't call. Like, they just showed up, right? Yeah, they just showed up. Somehow they knew, they came, they showed up, and it was such a comfort to me. And in a fraction of the time, we got the truck unloaded, got things set up, and so it was me, three guys, their older boys, and then the three movers that I'd hired, and we cut that time by a lot, saved a lot of money. You ever had anything like that in your life, or like maybe you've started a project and you're totally over your head, and then someone comes alongside you and joins you in it, and you're like, oh, I'm so glad you're here. Such a relief, such a comfort. You know what radical, rugged individualism is? It's really kind of all before us. It's in the commercials we see. It's kind of this like pick yourself up by your bootstraps, like you can do it, be all that you can be, you got this. It really is ever before it, but like a Lone Ranger mentality. Did you know that that's a biblically foreign concept? Yeah, that's a biblically foreign concept. Is there any cat people in the room? Cat people? Like, how are we going to get to cat people, right? You ever tried to brush a cat from tail to head? I don't think you should do that, but like, have you ever... You ever tried to do that? You're brushing your cat, trying to get all the fur, all the shed loose hair out of it. And like, there's a direction you need to go head to tail, and the cat gets really into it. But if you go the other way, the cat does. It's not into it at all. That's a good picture of Lone Ranger. It's going upstream. It's going against the grain. It doesn't work. It's biblically foreign. The gospel is accomplished among a team, a family, a body. I would even go as far to say that partnership in the midst of gospel ministry, it's where true friendship is found. It's the essence of friendship and meaningful friendship. is being together in the work of the gospel. So what's so important? We see Paul, he's cherishing, he's honoring all these people. What's so important about cherishing and honoring those that we labor together? Is it, you know, to promote world peace, to make a difference in our communities, to end, and I don't say this funny, but, you know, is it to try to end senseless violence that's just all around us, for us just to come together, to get along? What is it? Paul could have chosen so many different ways. Like when I think about this letter to the Colossians, he could have chosen so many different ways to finish up this letter, but he chose to give thanks, to encourage his ministry team, his people. And I think that's telling, and I think that's instructive to us. It's even tempting, I would say, to even write this section off as kind of like an obligatory, because it is a common thing that Paul does in the epistles. This is like an obligatory, like I just like Paul's like Oscar moment. Like I just want to thank, thank you and thank you, my. But it's so much more than that. It's rich, man. It's this intricate and meaningful network of people, real relationships that Paul cherishes. There's a lot for us here. We can't talk about every single person. There's some really interesting backstories going on, but we're going to zoom in on a few. And I think it's going to be helpful, and I think we're going to enjoy it. I think we're going to learn from it. So, okay, let's, chapter 4, let's start in verse 7. We're going to read 7 through 11. So here we go. I'm sorry, Tychicus. Does anyone else want to say Tychicus? Because that's what I want to say. But it's Tychicus. Cody Bertram, I was talking to him. I was like, dude, how do you say that name? And he's like, go listen to your Bible app and turn the audio on. And that is, and then Bailey said it. So it's Tychicus. Will tell you all about my activities or the things concerning me. That's another way to say that. He's a beloved brother, a faithful minister, fellow servant in the Lord, and I've sent him to you for this very purpose, that you may know how we are, that he may encourage your hearts. And with him, Onesimus, our faithful and beloved brother, who is one of you. They will tell you of everything that has taken place here. So Tychicus was the carrier or the deliverer of actually three letters that Paul wrote. So he would have been carrying the letter to the Colossians, Ephesians, and Philemon, all written by Paul in his first imprisonment in Rome. But look at the threefold description of Tychicus: beloved brother, faithful minister, fellow servant. That, do you know, it's the only place in all of Paul's letters that he describes one of his many ministry partners with this kind of credentialing and with this kind of affection. So that's gotcha, catch our attention. Paul honors him, and he wants the Colossians to listen to him. Let me say a quick word about honoring one another. I've been dying to talk to you guys about this. I almost did in my last sermon. But Tabor and I, before it was made official, I've been at Grace now almost 2 months now, praise God, and our first members meeting was in April, and we came, and the very first thing that Ryan had us do is we honored one another. It was so impactful to both Tabor and I. We went home talking about it, and it was just like this aroma, man. It just felt and smelled like Jesus. I mean, it was so impactful to us, and I'm so thankful to be a part of a church that has that woven in to their culture. It was a glorious scene. So Paul's strong words of honoring, it shows us that, like I said, Tychicus was trusted and beloved partner in ministry, and he apparently has the gift of encouragement. What did it say? That he may encourage your hearts. And I just want to ask you this. Do you have the gift of encouragement? Like, how would you know if you had the gift of encouragement? Has God given you the ability to order and deliver words in such a way that builds people up? Do you regularly and quickly recognize Christ-like progress in people around you? Is that you? Do you have the gift of encouragement? Here's a couple examples of maybe something like, hey, I just wanted to tell you that the way that you've kept your eyes on Jesus in the midst of your suffering, it's really affected my walk with Jesus. Or, hey, I noticed how you took time to correct your child with both patience and compassion, and it's made me want to ask Jesus to help me with that. That would be just some examples of having the gift of encouragement. And I just want to ask you, will you please lean into that gift here? Like, if you get those things regularly, if you're able to order words in such a way that recognizes Christ-like progress in people, do you know how important that is in the church? And like that's not one of those things that just makes us feel better about one another, or the all get along, or like let's focus on positivity. Something happens. Those words to one another actually propel ministry forward in the church. So I would just love to unleash and just completely free you, if I could, to lean into the gift of encouragement if that's something that you find yourself wanting to tell people. Just tell them. Do it. Do it today. Okay, what about Onesimus? He's also in this as well. There's a couple places along in this passage that are something really powerful happens. When we look into the background of a couple different folks mentioned, we're able to see a real living example of something that Paul has said to the Colossians that he is applying in his own relationships. So Onesimus, for example, he was a converted runaway slave. His slave owner was Philemon. He runs away from his employer, who he owes work and money, finds Paul, trusts Jesus, and now what does Paul say about him? That he's a faithful and beloved brother. He's a runaway slave. I love this. So listen to this quote. "Here's a man with no possessions," talking about Onesimus, "no rights, no inheritance under Roman law, no regard to the vast majority of people in his day, a man, nevertheless, whom Paul loves and describes as his spiritual son because," remember this in chapter 3, verse 11, "under Jesus, there's not Greek and Jew, circumcised and uncircumcised, barbarian, Scythian, slave, free, but now Christ is all and in all," the gospel applied in Paul's relationships. Isn't that cool? Like he applies it in real time, in real relationship. Let's look at another example, verse 10. "Aristarchus, my fellow prisoner, greets you. And Mark, the cousin of Barnabas, concerning whom you have received instructions. If he comes to you, welcome him." Let's talk about Mark or John Mark. There's a lot going on here. This is the author of the Gospel of Mark, same guy. And in Acts 13, Paul and company, so here's kind of the backstory, and there's more to it, but just the bare bones of it. Paul and company set out on the first missionary journey, and we learn that John Mark, at some point, decided to head back to Jerusalem when they got to a town called Pamphylia. We don't know why exactly, but John Mark departed the gang. He's like, "Guys, I got to go back. I can't finish this journey with you." And then in Acts 15, we learn that, it says it real passing in Acts 13. It's like, "Oh, and Mark went back." That's all it says. It's like, "Oh, okay, that seemed like a big deal." Well, in Acts 15, it's very clear that it left a bad taste in Paul's mouth. For Mark specifically, because when Barnabas suggests that Mark go with him and Paul on another journey, Paul says, "No thanks. He deserted us." This is Paul and Barnabas talking. This guy deserted us in the past. This is not a good idea. We're not taking him with us. And Paul and Barnabas got sideways with one another over Mark. Barnabas probably thought Paul was being unreasonable, and Paul probably thought Barnabas was being unwise. Totally sideways with one another. But here, some times past, verse 10, Paul tells the Colossians to welcome Mark if he comes to you. I think something's gone down. Healing took place. Gospel reconciliation happened. Sound familiar? Chapter 3, verses 12 and 13. "Put on then as God's chosen ones, holy and beloved, compassionate hearts, kindness, humility, meekness, patience, bearing with one another, and if one has a complaint against another, forgiving each other, as the Lord has forgiven you, so you also must forgive. Gospel applied in Paul's relationships. Is it helpful to you? It is to me. Is it helpful to you that Paul does not hold himself above the things he just wrote? He doesn't hold himself above it. Man, that really helps me. That just feels like a mercy. Like you can't make this stuff up. That's one of those things like in the Bible that it just validates this for me. It makes it real. Real relationships that get broken, like even the leaders that got sideways and wrong with people had to come back to the truth to reconcile the relationship. So Paul doesn't hold himself above gospel directives, gospel truth. Do you? Do we? Are you? Are we? Is there someone in this room that you need to seek forgiveness from? Or that you need to extend forgiveness to? Did you know that the corporate gathering is an excellent place to get that stuff taken care of? Do you know that? It's a really good place to get that stuff handled. So I just want to ask you, do you need to have a conversation with someone today? Does that need to be a part of your spiritual act of worship? Extending, and it could just look like this. You may go up to someone and maybe it's not clear to you, because sometimes when we get sideways with one another, as time passes, it just gets cloudy and fuzzy and we don't know where to start. And maybe it's just hey, is there something we need to talk about? I could be off and there may be nothing here, but I just feel like there's something between us. Do you need to do that today? Do you need to have a conversation today with someone? Let's keep going. Let's go to, these are my favorite. Let's go to 12 and 13. I love this. Talk about Epaphras. He gets two verses dedicated to him. There's a lot here. So Epaphras, who is one of you, a servant of Christ Jesus, greets you, always struggling or wrestling and contending. That's another word for that word, struggling. He's wrestling on your behalf in his prayers that you may stand mature and fully assured in all the will of God. For I bear him witness that he has worked. The word pain is associated with that word worked. He's worked hard for you and for those in Laodicea and in Hierapolis. So Epaphras, this guy is the founder of the church in Colossae. And probably the other two churches in the neighboring cities, which is Hierapolis and Laodicea, he probably found all three of them. So he was a church planter. He heard the good news that Paul was preaching in Ephesians in a place called the Hall of Tyrannus. Paul was preaching the word, and Epaphras heard it. And he took it back to his hometown and planted some churches. Well, then he went to Paul in prison to report how well the church was doing and then the danger that he was sensing with the false teachers. We've talked about that. I just want to remind you this. The preaching of the gospel always has ripple effects. Some are undetected. Some are really obvious. But a normal guy named Epaphras hears the gospel, believes, and starts a few churches. That's what happened. Wow. And nothing's changed. Nothing's changed for us. We still proclaim the gospel. People hear, believe, trust, and ministry flourishes because of it. And did you know, have you just taken a moment and just realized and just been thankful for the church that you're at? This church, the gospel is preached so faithfully week in and week out, continually. Is there something stirring up in you to do because the gospel that you've heard week in and week out? Is there a response rising up in you that you keep questioning, or maybe you keep pushing it down? Is there something you're afraid to pray about? Let me give you a few examples. What about opening your home for hospitality and ministry? Do you need to ask a coworker that you know what I'm talking about, that coworker that you need to just say, I'm a Christian, I pray, I believe in the power of God. Can I pray for you? Do you need to do that? Are you serving here at Grace? If not, why? I know you know this. We're about to expand our children's ministry, and we're about to add more classrooms. There are children ready and eager to hear the gospel, and you've got them captive, and they're ready to listen. We need you. If you're not serving, would you, maybe this is your response. What about aspiring to lead a community group? Has that thought crossed your mind and it's just maybe just you keep pushing it down? Do you need to pray about that? Have you felt prompted to become a foster parent or to adopt an orphan? What about international missions? You feel called overseas? Like, we still do that. Like, that's still really important to do and to put resources behind. You feel called to that? Is there something rising up in you? Another new ministry? Do you aspire to be a deacon here? An elder? Do you think you may should plant a church? Do you need to start that conversation? I could go on, but I just wonder what storehouses of gospel ministry are here. And like the latch is just about to burst open. It's just like, and it's just, man, it's under stress. And there's just this storehouse of gospel ministry and response that needs to just be unleashed and opened up so that ministry can flourish and thrive from this place that Jesus can be made much of. It's like when I go in my kids' room, like my kids don't know how to shut drawers. I know if yours do, mine don't. And there's always like clothes hanging out of them. And they said, oh, we've shut them, but there's like three pairs of jeans hanging out of them. What? Like every now and then when they get the drawer shut, you know, I applaud that. But then I open the drawer and it's just like, like an explosion of clothes out of the drawer. I wonder if the drawers are just full and just ready to burst. Epaphras sets such a powerful example of hearing the gospel and responding to it. Man, talk about bold evangelism. You guys hear that a lot. We hear that a lot. I mean, that is a part of our mission of this church. Deep friendships, treasuring Jesus, bold evangelism. Talk about bold evangelism and its implications. Look what happened. Paul was bold. Epaphras heard, responded, and was bold, started some new churches. Boldness leads to boldness. And it may not look like that for all of us. We're not all going to plant churches. I don't want you to get caught up in significance. That's what our minds do. Well, I'm not going to do something that's plant a church. I'm not going to plant a church. That's big time. Don't do that. Don't get caught up in significance, but do get caught up in faithfulness. Do get caught up in measure. Do get caught up in proportion. How is God leading you to respond? Boldness leads to boldness. Let me ask you, who was bold with you in evangelism? I bet each and every one of you, for those of you who are following Jesus, each and every one of you may could think back to someone. Maybe it's multiple people, a parent, a pastor, a Bible study teacher, a coach, a friend. Who was bold with you? Man, aren't you thankful? And I just want to ask you this. Will that boldness that was extended to you, will it terminate on you? Will it terminate on you? Like, will you just lap up that boldness and just, Jesus is just going to make me this, like, trophy, and I'm just going to be put on a shelf for everybody to look at. He's just going to keep shining me and making me like himself. Man, that's not, like, boldness leads to boldness. Let's not let it terminate on us. All right, and we do that in the Spirit's power with him. Let's ask for that. Lord, help me to be bold. All right, let's go to verses 14 through 17. We'll make a few stopping points along the way. Luke, the beloved physician, greets you, as does Demas. Give my greetings to the brothers at Laodicea and to Nympha and the church in her house. And when this letter has been read among you, have it also read in the church of the Laodiceans. And see that you also read the letter from Laodicea. And say to Archippus, see that you fulfill the ministry that you have received in the Lord. Let's talk about the brothers at Laodicea. Talk about partnership and collaboration between two churches in Laodicea and Colossians. They're mentioned next to each other often, so they had a close tie. Here's an interesting question. Why would Paul ask the Colossians, to convey greetings to the brothers or the church in Laodicea when he had written the letter to Laodicea? Like, why would Paul have them do that for him when he could have just written it? Or maybe he did. I mean, I don't know. But, like, why would he tell them to do that when he could have done it himself? Well, how about this? To promote fellowship between the two churches. To promote fellowship. Churches working together in the work of the gospel. Isn't that a beautiful thing? Not a beautiful thing. I don't know if you know this or not. Some of you might, some of you may not. If you don't, it's really no big deal, but I'll inform you that Grace has an affiliation with something called the Acts 29 Network. It's a network of churches that plant churches. That's its thing. Acts 29 Church, churches that plant churches. That's the one bell that they ring. We're affiliated with that. We collaborate. We strive together to plant more churches that plant churches for the sake of Jesus and his gospels. Here's some fun stats. So far this year, in 2018, 51 churches have been planted. In total, 725 churches have been planted worldwide through the Acts 29 network of churches. Whoa, 725 churches. We're playing a part in that. We're playing a part in that. Churches like, here's some things that will just kind of ring true for us, but churches like The Door in Coppell, the City Church, the Paradox Church, the Village Church, we're invested in these kinds of alliances and partnerships. Grace gives generously, financially to Omni Fellowship in Cedar Hill. Redeemer Church, Dubai. And there are plans being made to support Kanan and Diane Parker as they plant in East Fort Worth. That's out of the Paradox, right? Yeah, there's plans being made. That's exciting. And let me just jump back real quick, since we're talking about money. It's okay to talk about money. Jesus did a lot. Let me just jump back real quick as far as responding to the gospel. I can feel you going, uh-oh, he's about to say it. Like responding to the gospel like a Epaphras. Do you need to sell something? Do you need to liquidate some stock? Like, do you need to do something to give and contribute to the work of the gospel here at Grace Church? Don't get mad at me. Man, it's all through the scriptures. It is a biblical response to the gospel. And I promise you this. I can tell you that it has nothing to do with Ryan getting a new car. Have you ever ridden in his truck? You have to ask permission to wear a seatbelt. In the front seat, Ron and I go to lunch. I'm like, hey, man, I was maybe wondering if I could wear a seatbelt today. And he has to push a button under the seat. Okay. Sorry. I love your truck, man. I love your truck. Do you need to do that? Like, has the Lord just blessed you financially in business or in inheritance? I mean, there's all kinds of stuff. And that you need to sell something, and just so the gospel ministry can go forward. There's not an amount right here. Is that a response that you need to consider? Is that your bold response in response to what was boldly proclaimed to you? And we are caught up in a very real way, a modern day version of this very thing that we're reading about in the early church. We're in the same age. It's still going on. The story continues. And we're caught up in that. And being in the Acts 29 network of churches, we have this gift of being in relationship with other churches, to learn from, to be built up, to be encouraged by what others are going through and how they are standing firm. Every time, it never fails. It's been a couple years, but every time I go to a gathering, small or big, where these churches come together, every time I walk away with a grander view of God's movement in our nation and in the world. And I'm going to tell you something. He is up to some awesome things. You don't hear about it on the news, but he is up to some awesome things. I've talked to some of the people and heard some stories. You're caught up in that. We're caught up in that. The work of the gospel is accomplished among a team, a family, a body. There's no lone rangers. We talk about Nympha. I want to talk about Nympha. I love this. She hosted the house church in Laodicea. And I just want to take a moment, a little gear shift here. I want to take a moment and I want to talk about the ladies, the women of Grace Church. And I want to tell you that we need your leadership. We need your skills. We need your gifts. We need your abilities. And we're so thankful for you. Your gifts help move the gospel forward here. We're blessed at Grace with gifted women. I've only been here a couple months. Here's what I've seen. Less than 2 months. Women with gifts of discipleship, encouragement, hospitality, self-starters, ladies with grit who get in and serve when there's a need, teaching gifts, organizational skills. Here's a quick fun story. I was up here. Currently, I'm coming up to the offices on Tuesdays and Thursdays with Ryan, and I'd set up a meeting with a couple of our ladies that are leading Grace Kids, and we were just talking about logistics for this expansion we're doing later, and man, I was just kind of lost on like solutions. And these two ladies came in and were just like, ka, 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 ka. And they just like, man, they took care of it. They had solutions and they just mowed it down. It was awesome. I was just so thankful for the clarity they had when they came in. They had solutions. They were clear and decisive, and I was thankful. I was thankful. Here's a good Sam Storms quote. A recognition of the biblical principle of male headship in church leadership and in marriage should in no way undermine the spiritual gifting of women or inhibit their contribution to the expansion of God's kingdom. Gets me excited. Well, why don't we go to, let's go to verse 18. Let's start closing this up. I, Paul, write this greeting with my own hand. Remember my chains, and grace be with you. So Paul typically would have someone write his letters. He would speak it to them. They would scribe it for him. And then he would verify the letter. Again, this is a real common thing Paul would do. Like the last sentence, he would actually handwrite it himself to certify and to assure its readers that it was indeed coming from him. It was trustworthy. There was not an imposter writing this letter. Paul asked for his chains to be remembered. You see how Paul is aware of his need for others? You see any Lone Ranger mentality there? No. Their prayers, their support, he knows he needs them to be able to be faithful and effective to proclaim the gospel. Do we need any more evidence that the whole island thing, the Lone Ranger mentality, is biblically foreign? Do we need any more evidence that that's not a good road, that's not a good path for us? Even Paul felt needy for prayer. The work of the gospel is accomplished among a team, a body, a family, a network of relationships that have differing yet complementing gifts. Okay, so what I want to do, I want you to take a breath. We've kind of changed gears really quick, just a lot of different people. We've said things. I want you to literally, not figuratively, I want you to take a look around you. And I want you to just make eye contact with someone in this room. This this is your team. This is your body. This is your family. This is your intricate and meaningful network of relationships. These are your co-laborers in the work of the gospel, forged, fashioned, fortified in the fires of struggling, suffering, rejoicing, weeping, serving, striving, succeeding, failing, dancing, mourning, all toward one chief end, that Jesus would be glorified in and through us and in all things. Cherish one another. Honor one another. Stand with one another. Long suffer with one another. That's the biblical definition of love. Long suffering. My feet are planted. They are firm. No one will move me and keep me from standing with you. That's love. That's biblical love. I asked this question at the beginning. Why? Why is it so important to cherish one another? Is it the promoting the world peace? Is it making a difference in our communities? Is it to end hunger, to stop senseless violence all around us? I want all these things, but they are a byproduct of something greater. A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another. Just as I have loved you, you also are to love one another. By this, love, standing with one another, that's this. By this, all people will know that you are my disciples if you have love for one another. Our cherishing and our honoring one another puts Jesus on display for a dying, spiritually destitute, dead world around us. It puts Jesus on display. That's why it's important to cherish one another, because let me tell you something. It begs a question from people around us. Why? It begs that question. Why? Why do you do that? Like, don't you know that you got to look out for yourself? If you want something done, you got to do it yourself. You got to strike while the iron's hot. You got to get it done. That's what people ask us when they see this. Look out for yourself, man. Here's what you get to say. I laid down my life for others because someone laid down their life for me. Do you want to know about him? Do you want to know about him? And sometimes, man, I think we feel distant about these things in the Bible that we read, especially, you know, this last section here. Really, it took me a while to be like, what's here for us? But even though we may feel distant, I just want to say it again, that we are caught up in the same grand movement of God that Paul, his partners, the church at Colossae, the church at Laodicea were caught up in. So what's your response? What's your part to play here at Grace Church in this body with this team? You've been invited to join in the most important work ever of all time. The Father has invited you. Dads in the room, have you ever invited one of your kids into one of your projects around the house? When I have time, I'll change the oil on one of my cars because I don't even know if it has a computer in it. It's like one screw and like the oil just comes out. It's so simple, so I can do it. Man, when I invite my boys into that, Max, would you hand me that wrench? And they're under there in the car with me. Jet, you want to finish tightening this bolt? And I invite them into that work with me. Oh man, it's like, Dad, you would trust me to do that? Like I can hand you the wrench. Yeah, man, get in here, try it. Come on. Oh man, it lights them up. Gives them so much joy. You've been invited by the Father into his work. He wants you to enjoy his joy. Come on, jump on board. You won't regret it. But here's something sobering. Even if you don't, that won't stop this thing. And I feel like I need to say that, and here's why. I'm not trying to be mean, but just listen. Even if you don't, this won't, this thing, this church, this glory of Jesus will not be stopped. Why do I know that? Paul was in chains. He was in jail. And the glory of the gospel hit the fan while he was in jail. The gates of hell will not prevail against Jesus, his church, and his glory being made unknown. Will not prevail. Supreme Christ, who does not make mistakes, who rules with perfect execution and effectiveness. He's moving, churches are being planted, Jesus is saving, his people are loving one another, encouraging one another, building one another up. Real joy is being experienced. Come on, get caught up in it. Let's pray. Father, thank you that you have invited us into the most important, joy-filled, meaningful, glorious work of all time. Would you help us to honor one another, to cherish one another, and to enjoy this great network of intricate and meaningful relationships that it takes to go about the work of the gospel. Amen.